The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Hello, you're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show devoted to those who are choosing to take the risks and to have the courage to do work and live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lisa Marquardt. I am a certified career and life coach. My passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. So often, my clients come from the corporate world. They've been guided through the education system since elementary school and tend to find themselves on traditional career paths, as suggested by well-meaning parents or teachers or coaches, which translates to you pick an education path in high school, you get a college degree in that path, you start out with a good paying job in that field, and then you promote within that field until you retire. Eventually, the voice inside my clients' heads tells them that there is something else that they're meant to do or that they want to do. It usually starts with a whisper, and once it gets to a scream, that's when they call me. They want out of corporate America. They may not have the slightest idea what it is that they want to do, but they want out. And usually it's because they don't feel valued, regardless of how much money they're making. My guest today is contrary to that. She has chosen to navigate the corporate waters and continually seek career options that align with her skills, her talents, and her passions. She continues to figure it out and keeps moving closer to doing exactly what it is that she wants to do in her world of work. And that's not always easy. My guest today is Tatiana Simonian. She is the global head of cross-category marketing and experiential at Amazon Music. So, if you or someone you know is working in a corporate position and want to make the most of the opportunity, this show's for you. We're going to go to break. When we return, Tatiana will share with us her strategies on being happy and successful in the corporate world. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to have the courage and to take the risks to do work and to live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lisa Marquardt, and I am a certified career and life coach. My passion is guiding others to find and live theirs. My guest today is Tatiana Simonian. Tatiana is the global head of cross-category marketing and experiential at Amazon Music. And I've had the pleasure of knowing Tatiana for, at least the past year and a half or so. She's a total inspiration in navigating and creating a happy and successful corporate path. Welcome, Tatiana. So happy to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
It's so nice because I feel like I get to have you step into a little bit of my life in North Idaho. So I'm so happy that this worked out for you. Thank you.
Yes, I'm happy to join. And just full disclosure, their delivery is coming. So if my dogs get very active, that's just, you know, work from home life.
Yes, exactly. It's reality. We don't have a problem with that at all because I think everybody's experiencing similar kinds of things. So no problem. Anyway, so I was trying to think, how did we originally connect? I know it was through your husband, but how did I get lucky enough to get to know you so well?
I think it was life coaching. And I reached out to you because I just wanted to have a little bit more clarity on how to kind of, you know, I think that, let me back up by saying, I think that we all have aspects of our lives that, you know, some areas we are overactive in, and that's usually work for a lot of executives.
Yes.
And then other areas like creative efforts or relationships can feel kind of like wonky if we're looking at this as like a pie.
Yes.
So I think I was reaching out to you to kind of get some guidance on how to make the pieces of the pie equal so that it didn't feel like a a wonky shaped pie chart.
Yes. So well said. And you're exactly right. Usually clients show up with career related issues, and yes, it tends to seep into other areas of their lives as well. So you said it really well. So anyways, I'm just grateful that our paths have crossed and we've got an opportunity to know each other and work together, and it's been a total pleasure for me. And so part of that pleasure for me has been to watch you be able to step into your current position as a global head of cross-category marketing and experiential with Amazon Music. And so can you tell us, what exactly do you get to do in your world of work?
Yeah, everything. it's not too dissimilar. I think the main headers for the field I'm in would be marketing, as well as special projects. And the reason I say that, because in the world of tech, there are a lot of new divisions that spring up, and there are a lot of new business units. And so you wind up in this work that's a mix of BD and sometimes user acquisition and sometimes partnership. But the through line to what I do is effectively high-level marketing at the intersection of tech and entertainment, and leading high-growth teams that are looking at how we drive significant growth for an app or for a product through entertainment. So I did that at Twitter. I did that at Tumblr. I've done that at Disney Music Group. And now I'm doing this at Amazon Music.
Awesome. And so if it's possible, what does a somewhat typical day for you look like?
Well, the first thing I do is usually review my daily Outlook calendar again on my phone, just to make sure no meetings have dropped off or there aren't any fire drills. So I just kind of want to get a sense of like where there are any pockets in my day, if there are any. There's a planner I have called the High Performance Planner. It's a very simple day planner that I really enjoy. It's not too burdensome like other ones. So I go through that, and that allows me to categorize my priorities both professionally and personally in a better way.
Nice.
And I'm pretty new to using that since being at Amazon, but I really enjoy it. I prioritize what are my dues for the day so that I have a clear sense of like what my goals are, so that I have something to accomplish. Generally, there's a lot of one-on-one meetings during my day. I'm a people manager, so I normally have a lot of meetings with people on my team. My team consists of a variety of seniority levels, from extremely junior coordinators all the way up to senior executives. So that presents its own universe of challenges and opportunities within that. And then partner meetings, as well as internal strategy meetings. And I've shifted my career in the past couple of years to really like focus on more on the internal strategy side of the business and less on external, because I just like to get things done and build. So that's a lot of what I'm doing. And then at Amazon, we have a very heavy writing culture. So there could be a couple of hours where I'm writing a 6-page document or, analyzing something, thinking about how I'm going to impact the business for my team's work.
And so do you see is there a lot of change in the fact that, you're not actually able to meet with, your team members or, anybody that you're really working with in person? Do you see that there's a big difference by, working from home now for you?
I've worked from home for a really long time, to be honest. I live pretty far from the west side of Los Angeles. And in my last two roles, and then this one, I negotiated the ability to work from home at least 3 days a week. And I would say in tech, that's pretty easy to ask for,
right,
because it's a simple work-life balance benefit you can give an employee, and it reduces your overhead as well. So that part's not too dissimilar for me. What is dissimilar is the pandemic, for sure. I joined Amazon 2 days before the shutdown, and I only went to the office twice. So I largely manage a team I haven't met, with the exception of one employee.
Wow.
And that is, it's strange. I mean, there's even little things that you don't think about. I was making small talk with a colleague, and I had thought he was very short, and I found out he's 6'5". And I was just like, this is so, it's just so hilarious how your perceptions of people, of working, of managing is so different because you've never even been in the same room with someone.
Exactly.
And doing video calls all day is extremely draining. So I also think it's allowed a lot of, and this is something I hear from other friends in tech world, not just Amazon, but it's allowed people to decimate your calendar and
sure,
just schedule meetings every single half hour of the day. And so I've spoken with a lot of senior executives who have to put blocks for work time or email time because it just became very untenable.
Yeah, I would imagine. So you were a little bit of a trendsetter in as far as, you know, being familiar with working from home. But yes, with everybody joining you in that, it's kind of created its own concerns as well. And, you know, it's I think it's interesting because there's no real opportunity for people to kind of have the interpersonal connection that they do, you know, that where they maybe kind of bump into each other's lives a little bit more and, you know, bond in certain areas or, you know, kind of, you know, develop a different kind of a relationship that's not necessarily just professional. Do you think that comes into play a little bit with this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, it's especially in entertainment, which is such a social
right
business world, so much of our industry is based on going to client dinners and going to client lunches and having that kind of unobstructed 90 to 2 hour time frame where you can make small talk with
sure
people. And instead, there's this very almost Germanic way of doing things right now where it's like, hi, nice to meet you. Da, 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 da. Let's do the meeting. Let's finish the meeting. Let's go.
Right.
And so I've tried to make it a point when I meet people for the first time to spend 5 or 10 minutes just making small talk and getting to know them a little bit better. Discussing folks we know in common, et cetera, when dealing with external conversations so that it has a little bit of humanity to it.
Yes, yes. I think that's so important because I think that that's kind of the bond that keeps you going through some of the more challenging times is that you have a relationship with people that you're working with and, you know, hopefully you have collaborative goals and, you know, that just kind of helps cement that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that one of the mottos I've always had with my team is we're in the business of relationships and not connections.
Beautiful.
I think that folks don't like to feel as though your relationship with them is transactional. It's why a lot of people have an aversion to salesmen, right?
Yes.
Because they feel like you're just using them. But a great salesman will make you feel like you're their friend and that they've invested in you and gotten to know you. And I think everyone in entertainment is in the business of sales to some extent or another, whether it's selling an idea or selling a project and a product. And so I really overemphasize earning trust and building relationships so that, and you know, I'll counter this by saying the biggest challenges I have as a manager are generally when dealing with folks who don't want to invest that time because their focus is just on themselves and what they want to do. And that can be it can be difficult to get across to them that we can do so much more and drive so much more impact if we invest in people and want to and bring them along with us and try to see their point of view.
Right. Now, is that something that you feel that you can interview and get to know about somebody before they even become a part of your team? Is that kind of one of your strategies?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't hire most of my team in this regard, so right. It's a different situation. But there's a great book called The Ideal Team Player that basically breaks down how to effectively hire people. And the summary is essentially you want to look for people that are hungry, humble, and hardworking. And I think the humble part of it is where the relationship building lies, because there's a certain amount of humility involved in wanting to hear someone else's point of view and invest in them and view them as an equal. And people that are arrogant or entitled generally can't do that very effectively.
Right. And so is that a book that you would also suggest someone read if they're looking to either get hired into a corporate position or promote?
Yes.
Give them some
clues.
Yeah,
I mean, I listened to that book on Audible, full disclosure. It was like my commute book because I had made a bad hire. And this was years and years ago. And I was really wrapped with a lot of guilt over the wreckage it created across my team, the feedback I was receiving from them, the amount of churn it created. And I think it's easy to go, that person was the problem.
Right.
But that doesn't fix your future hiring pipeline, right?
Right.
So I really looked at the situation and was like, how did I miss this? Because it seemed like this was a really strong candidate and this was just not a fit, clearly, for what we needed for the business. And so reading that book was one of the things that I did so that I could get really clear on how I could avoid making that mistake in the future. And there are tactics they give you in that book so that you know how to, you know, avoid those pitfalls. And when I looked at that person and I assessed them against hungry, humble, and hard worker, I think that the interview process would have counted them out on hardworking and humble pretty quickly. And I could have just gone, oh, okay, this is not going to be a fit. Because I had part of the interview process in tech is usually doing a special project. And they had done a project that my manager had flagged to me just wasn't up to par. And at the time, the person was interviewing so strongly, I was like, oh, no, I mean, they can learn this. It's not a big deal. But in the end, my manager was right. You know, they didn't really put the sweat equity in to do this project right. And if that's what they're giving you in the interview process, that's the best it's going to get.
Yes.
You know, it's just you're getting them as their representative. You're not really getting them. And sure enough, brought the person onto the company and they would show up late to work. They would leave early. They would delegate work to juniors. And I was having a bunch of junior employees complaining to me pretty consistently about the situation while also wanting to curry favor with that person because that person was senior to them. And so it was a tough situation all around. And in the end, the person was super smart, super talented, a great employee. It just wasn't a fit.
Right.
And that was on me, not them.
Well,
you know,
and I think I
made the decision.
Right. But I think that what sounds like a value to someone that is looking to interview for a particular position is that they can question if they fit into those categories about are they hungry, are they humble, and is that something that they really, like, are they willing to approach that position from there? And because I think that's a lot of times they go after a job title or a company that they want to work for, and they don't necessarily look at exactly what they're going to be asked to do. And then when you have that contradiction in there, it causes that discomfort in the workplace for them. So it might be a good place to just kind of examine, you know, what it is that you really want to do by pursuing this position.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, and you and I have talked about this before. I think sometimes folks are so eager to get out of a bad situation that they will rationalize why another situation is right for them, or they will assume it is the only choice for them.
Right.
And I think I'm at a point in my career where I just don't do that anymore. Like, I would rather kind of hang out and just rest and vest, for lack of a better, you
yes.
know, phrase,
yep.
than jump to a job that I don't feel is going to be a right fit.
Yes.
You know, when I came to Amazon, I was convinced, like, this is a right move for me. This is what I want to do. And that conviction allowed me to survive my first 6 months, which were brutal. And this is not uncommon, you know, here in Texas.
Right.
So,
right.
But yeah.
Well, anyways, you know, I love hearing your voice of wisdom and sharing of your experience, but we're going to have to take a break right now, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to take the risks and to have the courage to do work and live lives that they genuinely love. I'm your host for the show. I'm Lissa Marquardt, and I am a certified career and life coach. My guest today is Tatiana Simonian, and she is the, I've lost her title here, Global Head of Cross-Category Marketing and Experiential with Amazon Music. And when we were just on break, Tatiana, we're talking a little bit about her career path and how she got started. Because I said at the top of the show, so many people just start out traditionally and kind of take their career path linearly. So I wanted to pick your brain a little bit on that, Tatiana. And, like, how did you get started in your career life?
Yeah, through curiosity, which is a short answer. The long answer is that I was pursuing a career in music. And it was around the time of my MySpace, late 90s, early 2000s. I had taught myself, well, probably 2000s, I had taught myself some basic front-end coding, which means HTML or CSS, because I wanted my band, MySpace page, to look good. And at that time in my career, I didn't really consider myself to have a career, to be honest. I was primarily doing journalism work. So I would freelance for LA Weekly and Rolling Stone and other music, you know, bylines here and there as a way of getting by. And the industry started to shift from print to digital, but digital journalism was really not respected at all. I would get paid a quarter of what print journalists would get paid for my reviews. So I was doing a lot of odds and ends to get by. I would do copywriting for retail companies like Lucky Brand, Hot Topic, Expedia, just anything that involved writing and digital and internet. And then around, you know, early 2000s, there was a guy named Duke Chow who had started a social network called Flukius. And it was a social network where you would share pictures you took on your mobile phone. What a novel idea. And it was essentially the first Instagram, and it was desktop only, however. And he wanted to drive more people to his site. So I agreed to effectively create a editorial component to the site. So I created a music magazine where I would bring exclusive interviews with artists like Flaming Lips and other folks to his site so that we could drive traffic there so people could see what it was all about. And while I was doing that, I wound up through the course of my work interviewing Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins.
Wow.
And one day he asked me why my MySpace page was better than his band's. And I was just like, yeah, I do this coding stuff. And then I started freelancing for the Pumpkins and was brought on in somewhat official capacity to to take on their quote new media, which is now just called social media. And from there, I went to Hot Topic corporate headquarters around 2004 through 2006 or seven. And I was doing a mix of copywriting and editorial for them. And then I started auditing and refining their social media strategy because they didn't have an idea around how they really wanted to ramp that. And so I made suggestions such as Twitter seemed like a place for a global brand account, but Facebook seemed like an opportunity for each store to have an account so they could address their local customers directly through Facebook comments, because Facebook was a platform more accustomed to localization. And the CEO of the company is this amazing woman named Betsy McLaughlin, who I still am in contact to this day, was like, who's this kid in the back of the office that's doing this work?
Wow.
And she took me to lunch. And it was actually a really cool story. We talked about what my dreams were and what I wanted to do. And she pulled out a piece of paper from her wallet. And it was basically her dreams from grad school.
Oh, wow.
And one of her dreams was to one day be a chief operating officer of a major corporation one day. And she wound up becoming the CEO. And she was there for many, many years and was a wonderful leader. From there, I was there for several years. I went to Disney Music Group, where I did digital marketing for all the pop stars that were on our label, as well as Walt Disney Records. So that was effectively, like, celebrities don't generally run all their social accounts. Facebook is usually very hands-off. So I would have been running Selena Gomez's Facebook account or Miley Cyrus's for the label. I would advise on Twitter strategy for the artists that were using Twitter, which at that time were not very many. 2009, 2010, it was still a very nascent platform. Instagram was not really a thing at that time, certainly not one that artists were paying attention to.
Right.
And MySpace was gone. From there, Twitter recruited me to become their first head of music, largely because I was running Facebook accounts for some of the largest pop stars in music, with the Joe Bros and Miley, Demi, Lena, etc., for their teams. It's funny to think about, because most of the artists didn't even know I was doing that. And then I was there for several years. It was a very groundbreaking role for my career. It actually gave me a career, I would say. Everything else was sort of a job. Then I went to Nielsen, where I was the vice president of sales, and I built a branded entertainment division. I was there for 2.5 years. I knew it wasn't going to be a culture fit for me, but I really wanted to shore up my skills as it relates to data. Marketers are always driving growth or driving revenue. And so I wanted to learn more about that. And then I was recruited by Tumblr when they were under Yahoo. To rebuild their global entertainment partnerships team, which basically means going out into the market and making sure that all entertainment partners are using Tumblr as a part of their marketing arsenal. So what that would mean was, when Black Panther was coming out, working with Disney Studios to make sure they had a Tumblr campaign, as well as creating campaigns for them. So we brought the cast of Black Panther to Tumblr, and we brought a bunch of creators who were fans of the film, or who were Black and were enthused about this movie coming out. We showcased art behind the cast that was created by Tumblr users. Chadwick Boseman in particular was so excited by that. He just thought the fan art was so amazing. And most of the art had come out before the film even was released. It's just, there was so much fervor for the movie on Tumblr. And then I was recruited by Amazon Music for a role on their artist marketing team. And because of the pandemic, that also wound up including live streaming, because my team oversaw the Amazon Music Twitch channel, and Twitch is part of the Amazon universe. I'm now transitioning to another organization in tech. We scale very quickly, and things are always moving around. And
yep.
I'm going to the Artist Products and Services division, which really excites me because I'm very motivated by future tech. In building. I'm a builder. I really love building. I love building, and I love entrepreneurial roles in marketing. So that's currently what I'm going to do. And then you know, last 5 years, I've had a mentorship blog. I've had life coaching clients myself. I still record music. I make bad art, bake a lot, and I still use a lot of social media. So that's sort of the short story on my career.
Yes. Well, you know, and listening through your path, part of it sounds like it was totally intentional on your behalf. And I'm curious, so when the recruit opportunities came along, what was your assessment process to how they were in alignment with, you know, the work that you genuinely wanted to do? Or did you find that you would get seduced into a position because of the title or who you got to work with? Or was it really intentional as to, you know, like, is it something that you genuinely want?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a couple factors that go into play every time I'm recruited. One is, do I ethically feel like I can work at this company? And do I believe in what they're doing?
Okay.
Two, do I like the person who will be my manager? Is one of the most important aspects of that, because most people don't leave their jobs, they leave their managers. Is the scope something that interests me? You know, I always say to people I mentor that you get to a certain seniority in your career and it's not about money and title, because you're going to get that, right? If you know how to negotiate and you're a senior executive, you're not really worried about the comp, because you're going to get the comp you want. And the title is something that if they really want, they're going to give to you anyway. It's about really feeling passionate about the opportunity. And also, you know, there are different brands of senior executives. A lot of the roles I get recruited for lately are, sometimes it's building things, but sometimes it's fixing things, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes a C-level executive is just hiring someone to clean up a mess they don't want to deal with.
Right.
And to me, that is not interesting. I know people that love, a good pivot strategy. They love being fixers. Not interested. I'm a builder. I really, my sweet spot is really honing into entrepreneurial opportunities where there is a blank canvas.
Yeah.
And I can build my own team, set my own KPIs, and really drive success in a way that hasn't been done before. You know, when Twitter hired me, I was the first music hire at any social platform. So no one knew what that role should look like. And now every social platform has entertainment divisions and music people, et cetera. And those roles are harder because there's no one coming before you.
Right.
And it's easier for everyone who comes after you because you were the one who hit your head against the wall. But I do like something about being the first.
Right.
Under the cover of a great leader as well. So that's sort of, you know, the things that interest me. I go, is this role creative? Is this role a builder? Is this role one where I'm going to get to lead a team? Am I going to be able to have influence across organizations? I don't really worry about my external title or my pay. I always get that. I'm a strong negotiator. I just care more about what is my day to day and who am I going to be reporting to and working with on that.
Right. And I think it's really interesting that you know that you're a builder, and that part of what comes with that is, like you said, it's you are clearing the way. You're creating a brand new template. And I'm sure there's a lot of headbanging that goes along with that one.
Yeah.
But to know it and to know that the outcome is what is your passion is, I think that's what gets you through those challenging and difficult times where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to create all of this.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it's daunting, but it's also exciting to get to build. And that's something that I really lean into.
Right. Right. Fascinating. Love to hear your path. Can't wait to learn some more. But once again, it's time for us to go to break. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. You're listening to Living Your Dream, a monthly talk show highlighting those who have chosen to take the risks and to have courage to do work and live lives that they genuinely love. I'm Lisa Marquardt, and I am a career and certified life coach. My guest today is Tatiana Simonian, and she is the global head of cross-category marketing and experiential at Amazon Music. And again, over break, Tatiana, we're talking a little bit about part of the reason I wanted to have her as a guest on the show is because I do believe that a lot of people that are working in corporate jobs hit those moments where they just want to bail, and for many reasons, choose to stay. And so I had to ask Tatiana if that was ever her experience. So Tatiana, tell us a little bit about, because I know you mentor others that you work with and guide them to, you know, be able to get to where they want to do as far as the work and relationships and, you know, day-to-day that they experience. So what was it like for you? What were your moments when you wanted to jump ship? And how did you get out of it?
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone who works in tech wants to jump ship at one point or another. And tech is the home of like the 5-month sabbatical, which I have not had the luxury to take yet. I should have done it after Twitter for the IPO. That was rough. I've led through one IPO and two acquisitions in my career. And those are definitely the moments where you are just like, oh my goodness, can I please never go through this again, because they're scary, you know. IPOs are a little bit more fun because there's a lot of upside, but it does require a certain amount of rigorous granularity on the business side and auditing and expenses in the way that you really don't see pre-IPO when the benefits are free-flowing and you got your snack ball and your free lunches and your fancy hotel.
Right.
You know, the closer you get to IPO and there's a lot of scrutiny on the business, the more everyone starts batting down the hatches. And it gets, you know, you'll have executives, one, scrambling around, really trying to put a lot more controls in place, and two, behaving badly because they want more stock.
Right.
Acquisition is, you know, the other side of that, where it becomes, I was saying at Tumblr, it was very much like Game of Thrones, because people know there's an opportunity to potentially make some pretty big leaps, but they also know that there are going to be multiple rounds of layoffs coming.
Yeah.
You've gone through two acquisitions. I mean, I think I went through probably 4 rounds in my last role. Verizon was a very layoff-friendly culture when I was part of the Oath ecosystem, and a lot of businesses address human capital that way in order to scale their business. That's just, unfortunately, the way the business world is. And as a manager, it was extremely difficult because you often cannot tell your team that you know layoffs are coming,
right,
and you're simultaneously having to assess and rank your employees and consider their lives and impact. And it's just a really, it's challenging. It can also be an opportunity to reorganize your business, however.
Right.
And it allows you to streamline and be efficient.
Okay.
So those were moments where I was just so stressed out, and I was just wanting to take breaks I couldn't take. And I think that you have to remember it's a period of time and it'll end, and you have an end date, either IPO date or acquisition date or deadline for a project. And you have to find ways to take time for yourself, whether it's a Friday off, if you can't take a week off. As managers, it's generally difficult to take weeks off.
Yep.
And then ask yourself, does this fulfill your why?
Yeah.
For me, tech always fulfills my why. I don't see myself ever working at a company that's not tech ever again.
Tatiana, we gotta wrap it up. Oh, so I so apologize for cutting you off. But anyways, I think that your words of, it's like to ask yourself your why is a really good strategy. So thank you so much. And I'm sorry that I had to cut you off, but it has been such a pleasure to have you and to learn from your growth and experience. If you find yourself in a position where you feel stuck or like there might be something more for you, let's talk.